I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, stage three of the Tour de France, the first sprint stage. We've been sort of blessed with the two exciting stages to open up the race, and now we've got the traditional sprint stage. It was quite difficult, actually, from Amorebieta at Chano to Bayonne, which is just north of Biarritz. I'll be going on holiday there shortly, actually, so I was checking out the coastline. 194 Ks. I really thought there was a chance for the break to go all the way today, but with 4K, 5.7% climb, 2,500 meters of climbing and up and down all day, but the last categorized climb was with 91 kilometers to go. It might have been too easy to control for the rest of the race. When the break formed, Benji, were you surprised that nobody really cared, that it was only a couple of teams that wanted to jump in the breakaway?
Well, on one end, Paulus is an expected rider to go in the breakaway because he wants to once again secure KOM points and therefore secure some more safety in that classification. He's likely a rider that should be able to do quite well on the later terrain in the KOM points as well. So it's not like he's only good at the early ones like Cort last year. So that's something beneficial for him. Pichon, another rider that went in the breakaway. And it's shocking that it's an only two-rider breakaway. Maybe there were other pushes, other attempts for larger breakaways to concede. But there's so many teams, so many sprinter teams that are like, oh, I don't want the big breakaway. So they're going to try and catch every single one that's 6-7 plus riders. So I think that's a major effect to why we only have a two-man breakaway here. The matter is that so many sprint teams just wanted a sprint.
Yeah, I was surprised though. Okay, so the break isn't a big problem, so you don't have to put a rider to chase. If you're Israel or if you're Intermarché, I would say that doesn't mean other teams couldn't have played this stage differently. Mm-hmm. And I'll pick out a few of them. So Jumbo are not going to chase, and they're not going to probably put a rider because it's the one day, the first sprint stage, they can get away with other teams doing it. But if you're Intermarché, Trek, Israel, and you want to get a result out of this stage, you have to pace those climbs full gas, mm-hmm. all the climbs on this parkour. Because you want to put work into Jakobsen, Groenewegen, Welsford, Bauhaus, even Philipsen a little bit, because that gives Binnie and Pedersen a much better chance to win. You don't really have a big old lead out with a top last man anyway. So if I was those teams, that would have been my approach, is making it like UAE had a stage yesterday, which is on the fringe. Yeah. It was possible that a group of 80 could have gone to the finish yesterday. But UAE made the entire race so difficult that that didn't happen. And I thought other sprint teams, even with that break, where I thought, okay, if you're Israel, sure you don't want to put Simon Clark in that break? Ugaul.
Yeah.
If you're even, a few other teams, I thought, okay, EF, Magnus Cort, or if a good group of five riders went and there was a climb where they could have formed the breakaway, I don't know. I think the reality is a lot of teams, 70% plus, have brought a sprinter. And today they say, okay, today we go for the sprinter, and they just look at it that way. But yeah, that's, Paulus took up the points. He then dropped himself after the last Cat 3, predictably, no point continuing on with it. And Pichon basically went and took combativity and went as deep into the race as possible. Was there, what happened at the IS, Benji? Because there was a bit of some tactics before the IS.
Yeah, Victor Lafay, the man of yesterday, in his invisible green jersey. I got to be honest, if I get a helicopter shot and there's a green jersey in the peloton in its current form, I don't recognize it at all. I can't pick it out. It's like Waldo. You're looking for Waldo or Wally. I don't know what the English version is. And hey, he's going into the attack before the intermediate sprint. And I was like, ooh, interesting. We see some action, because otherwise the stage was pretty boring at that point. So he spices it up and he does that and gets 15 points at the intermediate sprint. Obviously, Paulus and Pichon take points before him, but we also get a sprint after Lafay, and we see that being won by Pedersen. Bit of a chaotic sprint again. These intermediate sprints have been pretty chaotic, with, I feel like, the last one we saw yesterday, Van Poppel really came around, and then Mears was not in his wheel, and then we had other people trying to come around. So it's like, there are sprinters that don't want to put their eggs in the basket of the intermediate sprint. Like, I don't think Welsford wants to go all out for this intermediate sprint because he probably doesn't feel like he can do anything for green. So he's probably putting all eggs in the basket of the final sprint. While a Pedersen is probably, I'm probably going to get more points at the intermediate sprint if I go all out versus the finish line. And do you feel like that maybe costs those sprinters extra at the line, or do you think that it's right from Pedersen to say, okay, go all out for the intermediate sprint?
I don't think, I mean, where is it? 130Ks from the finish and they're cruising for a lot of the race afterwards. It's just a sprint to open up the legs. I don't see these guys do 10, you know, multiple sprints in training that already. I don't think if they're holding back, I mean, maybe they don't take a full risk if they're like, okay, am I going to take a risk to move up from fifth to fourth and take like one extra point? Probably not. There's more points at the finish anyway. But yeah, we get into it is very predictable what happened next, which is siesta time after Paulus dropped. And then once they got to about 40, 50Ks to go, I think about 50 just before Saint-Jean-de-Luz, some great scenery after the last serious climb of 1.2Ks, 9%. It's like every DS on their Velo viewer had a reminder to tell their team to get to the front and start pacing. That included GC teams. Now, why Lotto Destiny are setting up their train at 45Ks to go, I don't really know. Like, because if you're a sprint team, if you're caught behind a crash at 45Ks to go, you're going to come back. And even if you don't, I mean, that could also be the same for GC teams, frankly. Like, I think they're more worried about not crashing with the furniture. But yeah, and even if you don't come back, it's not like you've lost GC. And I think the better game theory thing is to give yourself the best position if you want to win the stage, not come third or fourth, is to save as much as possible, like actually UNOX tried to do. And UNOX tried to do, and then move up late and actually save energy. But anyway, Lotto were there. Jumbo got the call up for Van Baarle, Benoot and Van Hooijdonk. On the other side, I was quite impressed with FDJ and Vandenberg.
Yep.
Luke didn't pay me to say that. For Gadou. On the other, and then the far side, Quickstep were outstanding. I must say, Quickstep really like locked down that left side of the road as they looked at it for like 40 kilometers.
100%. They also basically claimed it as their territory, right? In certain corners, in certain roundabouts, they swooped from left to right. The road was there is the way they were acting, but it also helped Jakobsen to be in the perfect position without spending that much energy trying to move to the front with the train in later phases. Because while Quickstep is holding that team at the front, while Quickstep is holding Jakobsen at the front, we've got DSM trying to come around on the other side with seven riders in the same way that they do all the time in the past. And then we've got another team, Intermarché, trying to come through in every single direction. Then they lose half of their train. Then they come back together in the middle. Then they're in a position where they can't hold it. So then Jumbo is in a position in the middle suddenly, because Jumbo's been trying to keep Vingegaard safe until the 3 kilometer rule is how I see it. And they've been doing that on one side of the road. But at a certain point, they were in the middle with Vingegaard in the wheel of Van Hooijdonk. And not on safe that nicely, huh?
Yeah, he was really impressive. UAE, I think, kind of actually did the smart thing in the end. And I don't really think they had a choice. And this is, UAE might be stronger in the mountains, but definitely, like, as I've said many times, Langen and Bjerg cannot keep Pogacar at the front in these stages. Yep. And so you have a choice. You try and move up inside a sprinter in the gutter to get into front position for a couple of kilometers and then get washed back. Or you just do the Adam Yates and you sit at the back and you just, if there's a crash and you lose time, so be it, but you're not going to crash yourself deliberately and, or not deliberately, but put yourself in a position to crash. I've got a fly harassing me as usual. And so UAE basically disappeared.
Yep.
Completely disappeared. We had the helicopter shot wouldn't pan back. And of course, if Pogacar had a mechanical or there was a crash, they'd show it. So we could just presume UAE were at the back. And so Pogacar started Adam Yatesing and it didn't matter. So they almost, they weren't in the hectic. Whereas Vingegaard was really trying to stay in front position. Now there's ups and downs. There's two sort of 3% climbs of about 2.5 minutes duration back to back. And then there's obviously descents off those, which were actually steeper than the climbs themselves. And eventually Van Hooijdonk's gone. And so it's the road furniture in this stage. Now, maybe they thought the climbs before would thin out the peloton, but this was a full peloton. No one was dropped. Pichon was caught, obviously. The road furniture, I've almost never seen anything like it, Benji. We had roundabout, 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 speed bumps, narrow roads.
U-turn.
Closes, opens, U-turn at 2Ks. I'm less mad about the U-turn, honestly. Yeah. They all knew that was coming. Everyone knows the U-turn's there, but there's these dividers. Some of the dividers you can cross and ride over. Some of the dividers have a barrier at the start, which is actually at waist level. So in the peloton, you can't see it. And not all of them were signaled. It's actually a mirror. I thought for sure there'd be a big crash today. And it's actually a miracle there wasn't.
I thought so as well, because I was really nervous, eh? Like, we saw some situations with riders being squeezed and so forth, and sometimes that can lead to a crash, sometimes not. But it's also because, like you said, there's these small hills, these 2.5 minute climbs, roughly, and you see people trying to half wheel each other, teams trying to half wheel each other at the front of the peloton. And that's also stressful, because then you go into the descent with people trying to be at the front all at the same time.
They're sprinting.
They're literally sprinting to be at the front. And that's where the danger is as well. If there's a roundabout or some road furniture in the middle there, then it's also very sketchy. But in the end, Quickstep was honestly the strongest team until 1.2 kilometers to go.
Lampard was outstanding. He really was excellent navigating the road furniture and keeping Quickstep in front position. The problem for him was they were a little bit short on. And so we get into like the last 1500 meters. All the GC guys are safe. Forget about GC. Mm-hmm. Quato and Turner were like leading out a non-existent Ineos GC team, which was, I mean, Quato just made, I don't know. Anyway, as you say, Lampard pulls off. Bilbao would help position Bauhaus, I think. And Jakobsen makes the decision, and it was kind of made for him. Jumbo get into the middle of his train. And that's smart, because I'm looking at the how fast to go. 1,700 meters for Asgreen and Merku, way too far.
Yeah.
So Jakobsen being on Merku's wheel, third wheel, is a sitting duck. So he slides back and he goes onto Van Aert's wheel, which is a good wheel, because Jakobsen won the Tour de France first stage last year from Van Aert's wheel just about. He came over the top of him. So he knows he's quicker than Van Aert in a drag race. And then Alpecin do what Alpecin do best, Benji. You know, X had been okay, but then faded. Same with, it was Asgreen went off the front.
Yep.
And Merku kind of either got shuffled back, or Christoph let his wheel go. Or I don't know how Asgreen got off the front, or whether it was Petit had got in the middle of that and then wasn't strong enough to hold it.
Yeah, there was something that happened in that situation at 1.2, 1.3 kilometers to go, where Asgreen went off the front a tiny bit into like a right-hand bend. And then we see Alpecin with three riders realize, okay, we need to close this person down. Let's get past the riders that are at the front. And they get towards Asgreen. But it was kind of sketchy, because I feel like they almost crashed when they caught him. The third rider for Philipsen, so the second person in front of him, I actually don't know who it is. Was it Ricard? Was it Kroh Andersen? I don't know. I couldn't tell from the helicopter angle. But Van der Poel was in the wheel. And Van der Poel took the left side and the other lead out rider took the other side, and they had to try and come around, and Asgreen didn't really know where to go. So he kind of just went backwards, and I'm glad no one crashed there, but they continued that onwards. And we've got this lead out now settling out, where at 500 meters to go, we see the launch of Van der Poel within the wheel, Philipsen within the wheel, Van Aert. And honestly, at that point, I was like, it's between Van Aert and Philipsen.
Yeah.
There's no one else that I believe at that point has a chance of winning the stage. Because half of the sprinters are fighting in the shadow realm at that point.
They're fighting behind. You're going to have to move up in the wind. Van der Poel is going to launch both of these guys at really, really high speed. And it's not like he's going to launch them at 350 either. So with the sprint being 10 to 12 seconds or less, there's just these guys are too high level that unless you're Groeneweg and May or Jakobsen right on the wheel, which they weren't, you're not winning. And so that's basically what happened. We had Van der Poel launching Philipsen. He moves to the left because it's a bending right. We'll get to the bend. It's a bending right-hand finish. Van Aert actually starts his sprint before Philipsen. He tries to get the jump on him and jumps on the inside of the right-hand bend as it's bending around gently. Starts to move up actually with decent speed because he got the jump. And then Philipsen swings across and moves over to the right-hand side following the bend, but we'll discuss how far he moved. Van Aert has to break. When I first watched it without the heli shot, I was like, oh, maybe he could have got through that gap. But when you see the helicopter shot, he either crashes or breaks or has to give Philipsen a big elbow. And Philipsen wins the stage easily, ahead of Bauhaus coming in second, Ewan third, Jakobsen fourth, Van Aert fifth. Cavendish sixth is actually a better first start than I expected.
Yeah.
Compared to how he was going in the Giro early stages.
Especially in such a chaotic sprint.
Yeah.
Because Bignam got bullied away, for example. Welsford got bullied away, for example. There's loads of sprinters that got bullied away. And the fact that Cavendish was still in a position where he could fight for that sprint says that he was there in a position that he can still compete in. Obviously, not for the victory. I am somewhat surprised. Well, I'm actually not surprised by the fact that Bauhaus was competing in this sprint. Chaotic sprints plus Bauhaus equals a good result, right?
Always up there. And he nearly actually won this stage on in the official's office. But yeah, Mayer 7th, Groenewegen 8th, Pedersen 9th, Klokhard 10th, Binium 11th, Mozzato, Welsford, Christoph. So it's a deep list of sprinters. Like, there's not many bad sprinters in that top 10. Really, really high quality field. We've got to talk about, so Philipsen wins. Van Aert wasn't visibly, he didn't throw his hands up. He did something,
but I don't know what it was.
No, but it wasn't like him and Sagan last year on stage three where Sagan swore at him.
It wasn't like, fuck you, Philipsen, I'm the king of Belgium.
Maybe. Maybe he said it after, I don't know. But there wasn't anything like that. But then we see Philipsen, he goes to the winner's interview area, and all of a sudden his partner is giving him the phone.
Yeah.
A phone, and he's holding it landscape, and most people don't hold anything landscape unless they're watching video.
Yeah,
and even on Twitter or something, you watch it in vertical. So he's watching a replay of the stage very clearly, and they've got now a nervous look on their face. So clearly, the sprint had been referred to whatever the VAR, the commissaire's VAR. I have got the hat here. I'm not putting it on. I'm not enforcing any relegation. I think with a bend like this and with the barriers coming in and out, it's the first problem is the parkour, not the rider. Yep. I think Philipsen knew what he was doing, and he also went when the barriers opened up again. He still went all the way to the barriers. Yeah, he knew what he was doing. Did he know what was there jumping him early? I don't know, but it's too grey an area to say, clear relegation. I haven't looked at where he actually started his sprint because he does it. It's like the two movements, the move when Van der Poel first launches him, and then there is space for Wout, and then it's really hard to tell whether he moves again or whether the barriers cave in a bit around the bend and the barriers are what come up against Wout ahead. I don't know. So no relegation, in my opinion. But it would have been interesting to see what would have happened if Wout found a gap.
I think so as well. So we look at this corner and we see that Philipsen is following the bend, but not really the bend. He's also going into the bend a bit more as the bend completes. Now, in the race organizer's manual, there is a line that says that there should not be a bend in the final straight. Should. That's not must not be, but should. Means that you're advising a race organizer to not have a bend in the final sprint. In the rule set, we've always spoken about lanes and lines and so forth. It's actually quite funny. In the English rules of the UCI, the rule of relegation, we've spoken about it so many times, I actually don't know it by heart anymore, which is kind of sad, but you can't deviate from your line after launching your sprint is what's in one of the rules. So one says line, and then if you go to the penalties in the rule section, it says lane. So in one section, it says line. And in the other section, it says lane.
Yeah.
A line to me is exactly straight, which means that you need to go through the corner diagonally.
Which Philipsen kind of did. It's the quickest line.
Well, that's not diagonally, right?
Also, Philipsen went from, because it bent one way and then came back. He went from like the apex of the other and then went straight to the other in a less straight line to the other apex of the other bend. So I think most sprinters, particularly older sprinters that you'll hear, retired sprinters on punditry, they probably don't look at the rules, but they will all say, yeah, that's every sprinter should do that, because if you don't do that, you'd lose the sprint.
Yeah.
So it's better to win the sprint. Always it's better to win the sprint on the road and then leave it up to the officials because, you know, you're probably not going to get relegated 90% of the time unless you do something or crash a guy. And yeah, so I really think first sprint stage of the tour, it is disappointing that ASO couldn't find
a straight
stretch of 200 meters for the
first
sprint. And also with the barriers coming out like that always causes problems.
The mistake is at the parkour builder for me. Yes, Philipsen maybe deviates a bit more into a corner or somewhere, but I'll be honest about it. If you look at a corner and you say to a rider, would you like to sprint directly parallel to every part of the corner?
Yeah, like you're on train tracks.
Yeah, good luck doing that.
Yeah.
That's not as simple as it sounds. Even if you're a pro sprinter, parallel to the corner, I'll be like, okay, well, let's try and do that. I might actually go to the rider left a bit at a certain point, and yeah, I might hinder another rider. Yeah, Philipsen might have looked to the barrier a bit more and tried to find that because that's a beneficial line for him. But you're making it so much more difficult to judge deviations by not having a straight line. Next to that, it's also more dangerous because deviations lead to crashes.
Yeah. Well, what if Wout's like, you know, tries to force the issue through that gap? He chose to fight another day, I guess. Who do you think would have won?
I don't know. I think still Philipsen, but it would have been closer.
Because Philipsen was getting back up to speed.
Also didn't look like he had the biggest acceleration today.
No, it was closer than I thought. It wasn't like he just skipped away, right?
Yep.
Because if he had, this is the thing, right? If Philipsen has way more burst and clears Wout and is just in front of his front wheel, we don't even have this discussion. Because the fact was Wout had come alongside him because Philipsen wasn't going that fast at that moment in time. Whether he changed, I don't know. But it would have been interesting. But I think both of us very, very, very much thought Philipsen is the best sprinter in the world and gets the job done. And the reason I also think he's the best sprinter in the world is because, yeah, he doesn't let Wout through because he's like, I'll leave it in, you know, I'll just do the best sprint possible and see what happens.
That being said, despite I feel like he is the best sprinter in the world, I feel like his lead out is what made the difference today. I still feel like Van der Poel went early because he had to, because they didn't have enough riders, but other lead outs weren't not existent. So if you have the strongest lead out and you have to launch early, you're still better than all the other lead outs that are behind you, unable to do any lead out at all, and everybody's following your sprinter anyway. And I think that's why we got to a situation where Wout van Aert jumped a bit early while Philipsen was also jumping. And I swear that Philipsen launched significantly earlier than he usually jumps in the wheel of Van der Poel, if we compare it to Tirreno and so forth.
Yeah, I think he wanted to be first to that apex around the bend.
Yeah.
And Van Aert jumped early because he was looking for that himself. But in terms of the green jersey, I don't know what happens with countback, but Lefay and Philipsen are on equal 80 points. I assume Lefay keeps it because they've both won a stage and he has better stage.
And he's French. No, that's not a rule, but...
Could be. he'll be losing it tomorrow, I dare say. KOM Palace extends his lead. He's still in first on 18 points. He even got the red bib shorts. No changes, Jumbo in teams and Pogacar leading the youth classification. So tomorrow, Benji, we have... Oh, speaking of Pogacar, we didn't discuss it yesterday because it happened sort of after the podcast recording. On live TV, while they're showing the classement, or while he was cooling down on the trainer, they showed Pogacar like regaling Adam Yates with the story of Van Aert throwing his bid on. Because the bid on throw, we're not talking about when Wout punched the bars straight after Lefay won. After the finish, maybe another 50 meters after Van Aert got his bid on and threw it on the ground. And Pogacar regaled Yates with this story, sort of laughing at Wout van Aert. So what do you reckon? Good stuff for Netflix, I'm sure.
I love the drama.
Yeah.
That's for sure. There's some people that are saying that it's immature and so forth. I think both situations are a bit immature. I understand the frustration of Wout van Aert losing the stage. Throwing a beat on afterwards is a bit over the top, but I enjoy people having personality, riders having personality, so I don't mind it at all. Then apparently Sports, I wrote an article about him also throwing his bike around the bus and so forth, and then hearing shouting in the bus of Jumbo afterwards. It's possible, but I'm pretty sure that's just him cursing about the fact that he lost the stage and not cursing at Jonas or something for not taking over in the end. I'm fairly certain Wout does not blame Jonas at all.
Were you
in that
surprised
situation.
It blew up that much? Because it kept going and like
Belgian media, my friend.
But Jumbo had to like front the whole media this morning. Like everyone had to give interviews. Van Hooydonk, Van Aert, Zayman.
Mate,
they all had to front the media.
Why did Kelderman, after yesterday's stage,
and Maassen's,
why did they give an opinion about whether Jonas should have paced or not? There should have been like one simple answer from everybody. In the same way that we spoke about Quickstep and the Remco and their communication needed to be one clear-cut answer. Should have been the same here. Yeah, they seem to agree that Jonas should have taken over, but they say it from a standpoint of, in hindsight, he probably should have, but it's a situation that's so unique that...
I don't even think that Kelderman was saying he should have. I think he said, they're like, if Jonas took over, would you have caught Lefay? And he's like, yeah, probably. because we didn't in the end. So we did need one extra rider. Yeah. But and then it blew up. So, you know, Belgian media, obviously, they want Wout van Aert to win the stage. He will probably win a stage. I mean, he got close today. He probably would have come second at worst. So, but yeah, it's good drama. And I think it's building up. It kind of feels, to me, this is going to go over Benji said, it kind of feels like the Ashes test. I feel like there's something brewing between Jumbo and UAE.
The Ashes what?
The cricket. So it's a big, I'll do a quick explainer. So the Ashes is every 2 years, a cricket series between England and Australia. It's been happening, one of the most historical series for a long time. And it's like the most high intensity, bad blood, big, series.
The only reason you're hyped right now is because Australia won.
Yeah, of course we won. I mean, before the live stream yesterday, I was waiting. I was like, we're not starting until Stokes is out, and then saw it on it, like, bang, we're on.
Okay. Anyway, back to superior
sports. It's like when Flanders plays Wallonia in football.
At the World Cup.
Yeah. So or the Commonwealth Games. So
what?
To me, this is UAE and Jumbo. I feel like we've not seen the last of the drama because Van Aert's seen that from Pogacar. Yeah. And I think there could be some more drama, which I'm excited for.
Like, and on one end, you've always got people that are looking at the sport, maybe through some traditional glasses, like, oh, that's something we don't want to see in the sport. But I got to be honest, that is the shit that will make the sport grow.
Yeah, yeah.
Not people being happy in interviews. Oh, I'm happy. No, I'm not mad at Pogacar for doing it. No, people want drama. People come to the sport for drama. And if you want the better sport, have some more drama.
But also, the funny thing is, like, I getting back to the Netflix series, if you haven't watched our review of that, Benji and I, before the Tour de France, did a painstaking review of the series on the podcast. So go and check that out if you haven't already. But there's no drama they need to manufacture. Yep. Like,
well, to be fair, they had drama and didn't use it. True.
So maybe the second season they go for a little bit more. But anyway, just stay tuned for that because I think it's brewing. Anyway, tomorrow is an even more nailed on sprint stage from Dax to Nogaro. Probably not saying that correctly. We're in the sort of, heading towards the Pyrenees. This is the way I drive on the way to San Sebastian, actually, through Dax. There's also some good jumps horses, Benji. Good jumps horses in this area of France.
Really. I heard your horse won the other week.
Actually it did. Made of Gold won in Australia by 6 lengths. It actually could be really good. Like Melbourne, I'm not going to say Melbourne.
Are you rich now or what are we saying?
No, it was a maiden. But it could be quite good. It's a long distance horse. I mean, to win long distance races in Australia, not the highest quality.
It's like the Santa Suda Nanda, eh?
Well, no. So it's an imported horse from the UK.
Okay, you're finding talent abroad because in Australia you don't have good horses.
We don't have good long distance horses. Best sprinters in the world, though. Yeah. Like Nature Strip, etc. And Winx was the best. Anyway, I'm Black Caviar. Tomorrow's a sprint stage, unless there's crosswinds, but I don't think there will be. There's a couple of lumps and bumps. One Cat 4, 1 point. Palace won't even go on the break himself tomorrow. There's a Notre Dame, the Cycliste. There's the intermediate sprint. That might be. There's a motorway service station with the Air de Pyrenees, which has like a memorial to the Tour de France. I'm not sure if that's that, the Notre Dame of cycling, but I've been there and taken a video. This is the big boy sprint tomorrow again, Benji. Who have you got? I don't know how. I think this might be less technical to run in. I hope so.
Ooh, stage 4 sprint. I think we saw today that the Alpecin train is really ahead of other trains when it comes to the level in the actual sprint. We see that Quickstep is good at positioning themselves before the sprint, but then lose it when the actual final lead out happens. And now I saw Patrick say, so I'm shocked that there's something crazy in the last kilometer.
This finishes on a motorway circuit. This is crazy. This is like the Volta San Juan finish. Okay. Sorry for cutting you off, Benji. I'll run through. We've got a...
Who's the car equivalent of a cyclist?
What do you mean? Like, who's a... is Pogacar Verstappen? No, he'd have to actually win the Tour de France to be that.
But he's done it twice, so...
Not again. We've got a roundabout and then we enter a motorway circuit at Nogara and we just go back and these motorway circuits, they're cambered and there's lots of, they're basically non-braking bends because hot take, motor cars go faster than cyclists going 65 kph. So even though it looks like there's loads of bends, they won't be braking, I don't think, in most of these.
Mm-hmm.
but it will be very fast. Richese and Simmons went on a flyer. I'm going to base this all off that San Juan. So you can get off the front and win, but this is a Tour de France, not Vuelta San Juan.
There was so much wind that day.
Yeah, yeah. It is straight, the finish, thank Christ. It looks like it's actually very, very straight. It's a finishing straight on the circuit.
Sam Welsford wins.
Yeah, I think it's a big boy. I think Welsford's not a bad shout. I'm going to go with Fabio. I liked him today, and it's an easier day tomorrow.
I didn't even see him today at the end, so...
I need to look to see what happened because maybe he got chopped out of it or I don't know.
What do you mean you liked him today? As in up to the last kilometer?
Quickstep's positioning was much better. Okay. Their train was much better than I anticipated.
Agreed.
Actually.
Agreed.
And so I think, and Mercu's done the San Juan. And yeah. So they know motor circuits.
Unless he's got a mechanical again.
No. Today was the mechanical day and he didn't have one. So okay. Miraculous. Maybe on stage 8, he'll have the mechanical. I'm going with Jakobsen. You're going for Welsford. But Caleb Ewan also was quite good today, better than I expected coming third. So.
Yeah, but he's got a bit of a deficit because the Beist crash yesterday looks pretty banged up, so he's not really part of that train at the moment, and he's really been the lead out that has been strong for Lotto in the last 3 years. And when I look at Guarnieri, I feel like he's, no offense, I feel like he's kind of over when it comes to his lead out capabilities. Yes, he can position riders, but he can't make that real difference at staying at the front or getting past a certain rider and so forth. So I don't see that making the big difference either. And I feel like Ewan gets bullied off the wheel so many times in sprints anyway. So that's one thing there. When it comes to other sprinters, Biniam's positioning, I don't trust at all. So I don't know, if he gets lucky, he can have a good position and so forth.
I don't think Pedersen, Binny, or Coquard have the top end. Maybe Binny does based on that Swiss sprint, but his positioning and his light, he doesn't have a last man.
It's a fucking Swiss sprint, dude.
Yeah, but he was quite good, I thought. Like Van Aert was quick today and he beat him easily. I think he did. I think that Swiss sprint was quite good. I worry about Welsford's train. I'm still not convinced by it, frankly.
Mesgeth seemed good for Groenewegen today, but I feel like if Mesgeth had like 2% more, Groenewegen would have been in the ideal position.
They were trying to do the late move up whilst Alpecin were already doing it.
Yeah.
And they're not at that level and they just got left in the wind. So anyway, I think it'll be another sprint tomorrow. Maybe have a little siesta on your Tuesday. I certainly will be once the break forms. Will we see Total Energy in the break again? Or Arkea? Most likely. We could see a French breakaway. I think Cofidis should get in the break. Coquard's not winning. I'm sorry, Lecoq. You'll win stage 8, I'm sure, but not tomorrow.
Palace won't.
It's not worth it. It's a waste of time. Anyway, hopefully everyone stays upright. I'm glad all the GC guys did today and no one lost time. That's the most important thing. And thanks for listening as always. We'll see you with the recap of Stage 4 tomorrow. Until then, ciao.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.